Jessica Rabbit on steroids. Take a look at this.
This is Ronaldo. And that is 1-0 to Brazil.
Over the top. Oh, spectacular, Thiago! That one is one for history to look at. One of the goals of the season.
Picks out Rivaldo. Oh, he's seen the keeper off his line. Oh, extraordinary by Rivaldo.
Straight in, Thomas Muller with a beauty. Goalkeepers do not stop those.
Urgency up. James Rodriguez. Has to be a beautiful, absolutely brilliant.
Now from Malouda, he's got Henry making a move ahead of him. Zidane stepping through the challenges, feeding Patrick Vieira, ravaging run from midfield. Tackled by Chuan, brought down by Chuan.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of the Football Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Reggie. Joe will be with us this show. We also have a very special guest that's going to be talking to us tonight. His name is Sanford Carabin. And Sanford is a technical director of a football club here within Ontario, in the GTA, Greater Toronto Area, here in Ontario, Canada. He's also a licensed FIFA agent. And so we're going to be talking to him about the state of Canadian youth soccer here in the province and actually throughout Canada, and what players to look for in the next World Cups and what players are up and coming. We're also going to discuss some of the trials and tribulations becoming a FIFA agent and the steps that he took to become one, and the perception of Canadian players within Europe, all the big clubs in Europe, and how they see Canadian players. So it's going to be a very informative show that way. There's no top five. There's no Arsenal talk this week. We're just going to be strictly talking to Sanford. So as usual, you can subscribe to our podcast through iTunes. You can subscribe through TuneIn, Stitcher, Player FM. There's also a number of different ways you can subscribe to the podcast. If you just go to the website, which is footballweekly.com, that's FUTBOLweekly.com. If you navigate to the right hand side of the website, you can see a whole bunch of different ways to subscribe. You can subscribe via, like I said, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM. You can subscribe via email. There's tons of different ways to get it. You can just listen to it within the player that's built into the website as well. There's a form, so you can interact with us there as well. And I'll give all the Twitter information out at the end of the show as well. So we got to get this show on the road because got a lot of information to cover. So that being said, sit back, relax, and get stuck in with the Football Weekly Podcast. We'll be back after this. As promised last week in last week's episode, I told you guys that we were going to have a special guest with us this week. Sanford Carabin is a technical director. Is that correct, Sanford?
That's correct, yeah.
Technical.
You might need about 5 minutes to introduce everything.
Really.
So I'll let you do that.
really. Well, since you know what, I might miss a few things. We'll let Sanford let us in on what he does.
At the moment, I'm the technical director for Durham Region Soccer Association. I'm also help out as the club head coach at Brampton Youth on the other end of the city. I'm also coaching at Seneca College, and just recently agreed to for this summer to be the head coach for the new League One with Durham United. So that's my plate at this point.
Well, you got one more thing, Russ Hanford. You forgot one more thing, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, just from a coaching perspective, I'm also a licensed FIFA agent. I have been for the last 13 years now. That's still always looking for the next best player.
So you've been a licensed FIFA agent for 13 years now?
Yep, since 2002.
Okay, all right.
Well, you guys remember the show that had that little skit, Amon, and he had all those jobs.
Yeah.
That Sanford is that with soccer.
So, yeah, he seems like a very busy guy.
You do a great job in all those.
Unfortunately, I have an appetite for the sport. Sometimes it gets too much, but so far, so good. I'm managing to keep everything level.
Oh, good. We love it.
So, Joe,
yes, sir.
Sanford mentioned that he's taking over a team in League One. I know we touched on it a little bit in the previous podcast. Why don't you let everybody know exactly what the competition and the purpose of League One is?
For sure. I think whenever I'm, like I tell you, Reggie, whenever I'm wrong, just step right in, which is usually right away. But Sanford will do that too. In this case, because obviously Sanford's been involved with it since day one, last year too, and of course this year as a head coach. Basically, the Sanford Under-23 League, a developmental type league, kind of looking for the next step, if you will, in like the, you know, kind of pyramid of professional development for young players in Canada, again, with the focus on under-23. The teams can have the choice of being, you know, deemed professional or amateur and keeping them under-23 with paid or not paid. And, yeah, it's you know, a lot of them are tied to clubs or, you know, PSC has a team in it as well, or regional teams or even, like, you know, academy teams that have been taking part. Again, the focus is just on under-23 players. They have to have a certain amount of them. I know Sanford knows the details far better than myself. That's essentially it. And again, like a stepping stone into hopefully professional players. And again, now with the USL Pro happening as well with PFC2, this is just a nice, you know, fit or gradual step for players hopefully getting opportunities to play at higher levels, better competition, and of course playing for, you know, a lot of experienced good coaches like Sanford, for sure.
Right.
Is that about the Coles notes of it, Sanford? I don't know, I probably missed something, but
yeah, I mean, I think when the OSA and the TAC committee envisioned this league a few years back, the idea was to fill the void between players finishing their club careers, which is usually at U17, U18, and bridging it, the gap from that to sort of maybe a professional career. There was a lot of players kind of fell into that gray area from 18 to 21, where there were a lot of very good players gone off to college, but when they came back from college in the summer, there wasn't a lot of leagues for them to play in from a development point of view.
Does that sound familiar, Reggie?
I was about to say, it's like that. Yeah, right? This should have been around when we were playing.
I think there's a lot of people that kind of fell in that hole. And so this, I think this, the purpose of this league was to fill that gap. And we finished 1 year. I think, you know, making a standards-based league was the right way to go. I mean, if you just look from year one, two or three of the top five or six goal scorers in the whole league were from TFC, and they're all now signed with their USL Pro 2 team.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I think there was another player in the league that signed with Orlando City. So I would say probably three, at least four, maybe five players from last year's league are now in professional leagues one level above, in some cases with one player two levels above the League One. So right off the bat, it's produced or it's been able to springboard a few players.
Yeah, and a couple of players back into, you know, European sides as well, which is interesting too.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I did. I do remember a couple of players from, at least one from Vaughan that made that jump back.
Right, yeah.
So I think it's the right way to go. It does fill a void in the development cycle for young players. And hopefully the support along the way to get this league to continue to grow, and it's not a short-term solution.
For sure. And keeping on the theme of the young players, and I know, I don't know how involved you are within academies, or even if Durham Region has an academy.
Durham was an entity that was created by the Pickering Soccer Club.
Okay.
Entity, strictly for League One.
Oh, okay.
So it was, the team was made up, spearheaded by the Pickering Club, but it is meant to represent the whole Durham Region. Yeah. And if you look at the colors, get a chance to go on the website and look at the colors of the shirt. The colors of the shirt are made up of all the club colors for all the big clubs in Durham.
Okay. Oh, wow.
So they really want to have a Durham representative. And, you know, last year we had teams from many of the clubs come out and support the teams in our home games. And then I envision
great
that.
Idea. That's a great way to go.
It is. So, I didn't know that. I want you to clear up some misconceptions about academies. And I hear it from other people as well. It's not just my own opinions. But the main problem I hear about the academies is that it's set up to be a cash grab for clubs. Yay, nay. Where do you see the benefit for the academies? I know there's going to be good players coming out of the academies, but not every player is going to make it. And I don't know if it's an invitation to an academy, or you just take anybody who can pay.
Well, I don't necessarily agree that it's a cash grab. Academies started initially. I mean, I think one of the first ones was Bryce almost 14, 15 years ago. And it basically was started because there were deficiency at the club system.
Absolutely.
And so a typical scenario I tell people is, you know, you would be, let's say you were on a B team at a club and you weren't selected for the A team, but you felt you deserved to be on the A team. They were the kids initially leaving the club system to look for an alternative route.
Okay.
And sometimes felt that it was not the skill that prevented their son or daughter from making the first team, but other factors.
Yep.
And I'm sure if you talk to other people that have been involved with clubs for years, they would have other stories of how that evolved. But, you know, over the years, the academies started to provide, again, to fill a void where there was good coaching, because most of the times they hired senior qualified coaches. I mean, it's just evolved. The difficulty in the early years of the academy was that they couldn't match the competition level at the club system. There were some deficiencies in terms of the player pathway, where if you went into the academy system, you were not considered for regional, provincial teams because you weren't a member of the OSA per se.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent point.
It's over the years that's evolved. I think I would say going back about 6 years ago, the OSA corrected that by allowing players, the academy system, to be considered for regional and provincial teams. And now it's got to a point where I think it's pushed the clubs to get better.
For sure. Bingo.
And it's really pushed the clubs to invest in their coaching education and as a way to retain their players, so that when you look at maybe a consideration of leaving, you should be looking at the level of coaching and the level of players that you're going to be working with day in, day out as the key factors. You know, whether they league or come second, third, or fourth should not be the determining factor at the young ages.
And this is, we've talked about this a lot on our show too. Sanford and Reg, we've said it too, is, you know, and Sanford just hit it again, as he usually does. You know, is it about winning trophies or being on the best team, or is it exactly what you were saying, Sanford, is, who is coaching? Who's developing you? Are you developing? If you're a parent, you know, is your kid getting, you know, good training, and are they getting better, right? Because that person is, quote unquote, there for the right reasons, meaning he or she is qualified, right, and is doing those proper things. So
that's right. Yeah.
And these coaches are all certified. But is it a full time job for the coaches? They're not volunteer parents, obviously.
No, they're not. I wouldn't say there's many that are at a full-time level.
Mm.
There's a large number at a part-time level.
Right.
But, you know, as it evolves, I mean, I can envision that, you know, you get a lot more full-time positions in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we're structured in Canada, unfortunately, it's about the people that pay and the people that play. So,
right.
You know, if you want experience, environments at clubs or academies, and you want good coaching, they come at a cost, and you know, it's usually the parents that are bearing most of the cost. So the system's less fragmented than it was in the past. It's getting better, and it's got to a point now where, I'm not sure the exact date, but certainly in the last 6 months, the CSA has come out, and there's a mandate for all the provincial associations to integrate academies into their current structure. That's mandated by the CSA now. Now, how long they do that, how long it takes them to get that sorted, and how they do it is up to each individual province. But I know the OSA is working very diligently to try to integrate the academies into their system and make sure that, you know, everybody's playing on the same level playing field. So the rules and policies and regulations that clubs have to adhere to, then the academies have to do that as well. And I think we're getting closer to that.
Okay, well, Sanford, let me ask this question then. Being that the parents are bearing a lot of the costs, and I know, like any sport within Canada, it's not cheap. I'm assuming it's not cheap.
No, it's not.
Do the academies provide any type of financial assistance, like scholarships, to players that they view as extraordinary? Just see, you have a Canadian Messi out there, but he can't afford to. The parents can't afford to pay everything that the academies are asking, or the teams are asking. Is there like a financial assistance program for some of these players that are viewed as extraordinary?
I suspect there is. I don't know of any documented academies that have come out and said they have a fund or maybe underprivileged kids. Mm-hmm. But I would say that most of the academies do have something in place.
Here's the elephant in the room, though, Sanford, maybe. The professional clubs have academies, and they don't. You don't have to pay.
Correct. Yeah.
Right.
Right. So, yep. So that's kind of, you know, the difference is that, like, so, Reggie, you talk about academies. If we're used to, like, in, you know, Europe and South America,
right?
Those are always connected to professional clubs.
Correct.
Whereas here we have these academies, like Sam, again, he's explained, you know, brilliantly, that aren't connected to those. Right.
Right.
And so those you're still having to play, and like Sanford said, yeah, there are, I'm sure there's situations where they do some subsidies and so on. But like Toronto FC, Vancouver Whitecaps, Montreal, let's say, if your kid, and Sanford, how young would players, like how young are TFC accepting players now, like their academy? I know you know that. I don't.
Yeah, they just started this year. In fact, just since January this year, they've started to populate the U10, U11, and U12 age.
There you go.
So. Your point is, Reggie, because if you have a special player at 11 or 12, really the best option and the only option is TFC right now, because it's the highest level we have, and it's no cost to the parent. It's completely funded by the parent club. So,
yeah.
You know, unfortunately, there's a limited amount of spaces that they have at each of the age groups.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're trying to attract the best possible players. Now, at 10, 11, and 12, in my opinion, it's very difficult to separate players potentially at that age, because a lot of them are still going through their growth phases.
Yep.
There's still a level that they need to get to before you can say, yeah, this is a player we're going to invest long-term in. So, at the younger ages, TFC is picking the best players they have available to them and looking at them on an annual basis. But when they get to about, I'd say, 14, 15, that's when they're really kind of looking fast forward and saying, can this player help us when they're 18?
Like how high or low is their ceiling, for example?
Yes, yeah. They're at least offering it now. Do I have a difference of opinion on whether they should be going that early, because I still think the clubs offer a really good value. And you know, if you're a kid from Barrie, is an exceptional player at 11, do you want to be driving down to Toronto four times a week at 11?
Well,
you know,
that's a good point. That's a good point.
So, the clubs, because the clubs have gotten better over the years, the level of coaching is over the last 5 years has seen an enormous rise. Really has.
Standards have gone up, right? Standards based, well, with Stanford's saying, right? You know.
Yeah, it has, and. You could argue that some of the coaches at PFC that coach in the academy system, there's many, many coaches at the club level that are on par with them, if not better.
I'd say that. I think Sanford's being really nice, guys. I appreciate that. They are. And it's no disrespect to them, but it's true. We are speaking to one of them, too, guys. I think that's a good point, too. And again, it's not to bash or say anything bad or anybody, but it's the truth. It's very, very true. There's a lot of good there, and Sanford, one of those guys fighting the good fight, and absolutely agree with that for sure. But again, Sanford, it becomes maybe for, and not to bash them, maybe on the other end, maybe you can shed light on this too. You know, your opportunity at, and Reggie asked this question about, are they part-time or full-time? You know, they're more likely to land something that might be leading to full-time if they are at TFC, right? So it's
correct, yeah.
You know, obviously because of the parent club and the parent company that's involved, right? So, Sanford, if you were to say, okay, a big loaded question, but what, finally, do we need to do? What does the CSA need to do? We talked a little bit about it. What do they need to do that we're to ensure that our players actually have a chance to maybe qualify for 2022? I mean, I know it's a big scope, but what are your general thoughts on that?
I mean, you could go on a number of different tangents.
Yeah, totally.
But in general, I think there has to be more investment into the men's program. Financially, there has to be more backing. We have to have more times a year where players are getting together. And then it's a ripple effect. As they start to develop and get better, then you attract better competition in your friendly games, which only feeds players playing, you know, no disrespect to Moldova, but we need, we need to be playing higher-ranked teams to be better. Now we can't track those higher plays because of our ranking. So it's kind of a, it's all tied together, but, you know, it's not all doom and gloom. I think, you know, 6 years ago, the CSA started an under-15 program.
Right.
And I think we're in the fifth year of it, and that's been a big plus because we're getting kids at the 14 age group integrated into the Canadian system earlier than we've ever done.
Right.
And so they're getting competition at under 15, under 17, under 20. And the more international exposure they get at the earlier age, the better we're going to become, I think, over time.
And traveling in CONCACAF, right, Sanford, right? That's a big thing, right?
Correct. Yep.
Playing in Costa Rica, playing in Jamaica, playing in these places, right? I think that's what a lot of our viewers, maybe, or our listeners, sorry, they might not really get what me and Reggie always talk about. It's, you know, that's where you're qualifying, you know, like in these areas and the different cultural things and environmental things that go with that, right?
So. Yep. I mean, learning, you take the under 20s that just recently happened, you know, they were played in Jamaica. And I think two of the games were played at around 3 o'clock in the afternoon in intense heat.
Right.
And, you know, we've got players on that. There were players on that team that were, well, the bulk of them were at MLS academies and hadn't been training for a good month and a half before that.
But
right?
Why?
Players on sometimes like a bit of a winter break beforehand, right? Like,
but why is
they,
that?
Now they got to go into that environment with heat. It's difficult. And so, you know, that's a good learning. It didn't come out the way I think a lot of people thought it would. But certainly the players that participated in that, that's a learning experience from a preparation point of view. And you know, I think there were only, we have a ton of players at that age group that have potential. I mean, you know, I watched those games, as I suggest, probably a lot of people in soccer did. And we had some players on that are playing for some big clubs.
Well, Reggie and I talked about the lead-up, and I felt like Reggie was saying, was this the same team? Because I talked about, you know, the three friendlies that U-20 group played against USA, Russia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm missing one other one, Sanford.
I can't remember.
They played England, didn't
England,
they?
Yeah.
England,
I mean,
that's it.
You know, for our listeners, they went undefeated.
Yep.
I mean, and they were brilliant. And
but we mentioned the travel, and it is a huge factor. But Sanford and Joel, both being coaches, you know you're playing in Jamaica. You know it's hot. Don't you prepare for that by taking the team over there maybe a little bit earlier than when you did?
Sanford, I think this is what you were talking about, right? This is
what you're kind of
alluding to.
And I think in a perfect world, the coaches and the CSA would have loved to have done that, but that didn't happen.
Right.
But is there a reason why, or is it just?
I don't know. I mean, I think maybe 7 or 8 players that had to get released from club team.
And there you go.
The FIFA rule for the under 20s is clubs are not obligated to release their players for a youth championship.
Is that right?
Can that be a great lead into this, Sanford?
Is that right?
Okay.
I'll say it. I'll say it for Sanford. Not for Sanford. I shouldn't say that. For me. But Sanford represents the best young player we have in this country, in my opinion. One was on display, I believe, with the U-20s, Michael Petrasso, who Sanford had some experience with earlier as well. And Sanford, he is on loan now at...
Is it QPR?
His parent club is QPR.
Oh, okay.
Right, and he's on loan now, or is he back? I'm not...
Well, I don't represent Michael.
No, I know. I'm getting to that. Sanford represents Fraser Aird, who's at... Rangers, but I'm saying those two players. So Michael played in the U20s, but he was missing a partner who would have absolutely helped him. I know he had Dylan Carrero, too, who was missing, and Sanford was talking about the U20. The clubs didn't have to release. They're not obligated, correct, Sanford, to release players for U20 competition?
Yeah, and in both those last two names that you mentioned, Fraser is a first-team regular with Rangers, and they decided not to release him because they had some big games in it during that time period. And Dylan, who played who was with Dundee United at the time, they only let the CSA know the day before they were due to release players that he wasn't coming. So, you know, in the CSA's defense, they were helpless in getting those two players because
yeah,
the rule... There's not really much they can do, and certainly those two players would have helped in an offensive point of view.
For sure.
And if you look, I think three of the games they lost by a goal.
Well,
you know, you could have argued that they would have helped. I think offensively they would have.
Well, we always talk about players not playing important games enough, and these two are. So yeah, the CSA, and we talked about this before. I think Reggie on previous podcasts. They do take a lot of heat, deservedly so, in a lot of areas.
Mm-hmm.
In this area, and we said it too, I mean, they really wanted to have these two players.
Yeah, and I know personally that, you know, the coaching staff, I spoke to them before the tournament. I spoke to them after the tournament. They had very high hopes. They still have very high hopes for this age bracket. There were primarily 95s. There was, I think, 7 or 8 96s in the squad,
right.
Which under technically... 18-year-olds, not 19-year-olds. So they still have high hopes. I think, you know, this was a case of the environment, the pressure, and it just didn't... They got unlucky in a couple games. But, you know, I don't think that necessarily means that this group of players is not the answer moving forward. I think you'll see a lot of these players in the future. Also think you'll see a lot of the coaching staff, because I thought they did a really good job
leading
the
up
last
to it.
Years preparing them, and at the end of the day, when they cross the lines, the coaches can't do much. The players got to perform.
Well, and big picture, like, you know, we just came off a summer with the World Cup. Big teams didn't perform, and that's going to happen. I mean, I think,
yep.
And they are kids, right? I mean, yep. In the big picture, they are. This is not a Canada team that was so far out of the realm, looked out of, you know, I know everyone likes to point to that, but I think these kids, and yes, do we have some personal connection with them? Yeah, maybe we do, of course. I know Sanford, of course, representing Fraser. But let's not take it and have these kids be the fall guys for, you know, the previous failures. Is that fair, I think, to say?
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, the captain of the team was also one of my players, Luca.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Luca Gasparato, for everybody.
And Luca's playing professionally in Scotland at Airdrie right now. He's played probably the last 16 games straight, starting 90 minutes as a center back, and he found the heat tough, and he's pretty fit. He's in mid-season form.
Right, but poor guy's playing in Scotland, right? Like, again, environmental, right? Like the weather's different. I mean, you know, big difference, big adjustment.
You're right. So, I mean, I think there's still a lot of pluses. I think the coaching staff, they were heavily invested in this age group. And I know they, you know, they probably publicly haven't displayed anything, but I can assure you that they did everything they could to get them prepared. And they have great relationships with all the players. Like, over the years, I haven't heard so many players on a national team praise the coaching staff and the support they got at this under 20. They had really strong relationships with the players and connect with them. And, you know, hopefully that continues.
Well, I guess this will lead us into my next point. And I'm with Sanford, too, for all those. I mean, we do have a bias. Sanford more, I mean, I've said it before, I think on these podcasts, Sanford is one of the guys who got me into coaching and keeps me hopefully in the right path. This age group is highly competitive. And, I mean, great competitors. They're always up for the big stage. I think that's fair to say, going through their development, so on. A lot of them taking chances and leaving their homes early and doing what they need to be, or sorry, what needed to be done to become better professionals, not just along for the ride. So I guess our next lead up is another thing that Reggie and I have talked about, and we all like to talk about. And if you're a footy fan in Canada, of course you're talking about it in the pubs and establishments for sure. Senior men's player choices. Maybe Sanford, you can shed light on this. Everybody thinks we got these amazing players and they're not calling them. Everyone knows that. I'm not to that extent where these guys are missing it so much. But Sanford, are there guys that maybe we might see there that haven't been in there in the past that we might see getting there? We've mentioned a few of the youth players. Are there anybody?
It's got to be.
I don't think we have the player pool that anyone can really say glaringly, oh, we've missed this player.
Right.
And they're in their mid-20s and they're playing. I mean, I think there's players out there that maybe deserve a chance.
Right.
But, you know, looking back the last, year and a half, 2 years since the new head coach has come in, he's provided a lot of opportunities for young players in the first team. Not everybody, but he has brought in some young players and he's tried some a lot more players from North America. Not necessarily Europe, but you know, at the end of the day, when you've got an international, you need a mix of veterans as well as the young players, and you can't just go into a match with a bunch of young players.
What about players who are unattached?
Well, yeah, I think probably what you're referring to is should they have been called in the first place?
I am, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good debate. I mean, if you had in best laid plans, you had a huge player pool, you wouldn't have that issue, but maybe at the time of the international, he was forced to call some players in that are unattached because other players aren't available. It's not a perfect situation. I don't want to be overly critical because I don't know the specifics of why, but very few coaches, national team coaches, would call in players that are not in pro environment.
And that's fair. I mean, like I said, Reggie, I know you're chomping at the bit.
Well, those are the times. I think those are the games when you're playing the teams like Moldova, like we said, where you actually try to put in players that maybe don't have that experience, and you try to bring them up through those games. Because with the friendlies are just that, friendlies. They're played to see what you have. No.
Yeah, you've got a good point there. It's awfully difficult to make a judgment call on that long term, but
I mean that's what I would do. The qualifying games are one thing, but if you're playing a game against whoever, Liechtenstein in February, when there's no upcoming tournament, there's no Gold Cup coming up, there's no World Cup qualifying coming up. I mean, those are the times I would say, you know what? Let me see if I can get some of these young guys here on an during the international break, and let's put them together and see what we have exactly.
Well, anytime you play another country, Reggie, and it's an official game, it affects your rankings.
Right. But do we really care about FIFA rankings at this point? Ourselves in Canada,
well,
I mean?
Yeah. Well, it actually is important. Sanford probably, I mean.
Yeah, it is, because one of the mechanisms that is in place with FIFA, when you have a player that is looking to transfer to a European league.
Okay.
Let's take, for instance, a Canadian looking to play in England.
Right.
So player Daniel Henry, who was transferred. Now, Daniel doesn't have a European passport.
Right.
But one of the mechanisms when you're over 18 is if your country is in the top 75 in the world and the player has played 2 full years or has been in 75% of the games over a 2-year period with the national squad, that makes the application process for a work permit to play in England much easier.
Okay.
The ranking currently now for 100 and, I don't know, we're in the 130s or something, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm. We are up there.
Yeah, there's definitely an advantage for having a, now, you can argue whether the rankings are this, that, and another, but for a country like us, it's important our ranking is high so that we can move players on.
And I think that was my point, too, is if, you know, if you're Spain, Portugal, whatever, England. I mean, you're not going to drop to a point where that's going to affect your players as much or even anything, right? When you're comparing it to, like you said, Sanford, a country like ourselves, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
So they can afford to bring in, you know, younger guys too. But, and that's where, again, Red, we're saying is the problem with this ranking system too.
It's so flawed.
If you want to encourage younger players or federations like the CSA to give their players a chance, at the same time, they don't want to take away their chance to play in that also important professional environment and competitive professional environment.
Yep.
Now, Sanford, you mentioned a little bit earlier about Frazier and, I guess, Michael. Did Michael play in the under-20 qualifying?
Michael played, yep.
Okay,
yep.
So we're talking about, I'll bring up Frazier. Frazier didn't play, right? He wasn't released from Rangers in Scotland, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so if that's a senior game. Would Rangers release him or no?
Yeah, if it's on the FIFA date, if it's a game that's under the FIFA date,
yeah, they would have to.
They're obligated to release him. Yeah.
Okay, because it's just for youth teams that they don't have to, right? For youth tournaments, right?
Yep.
Okay, because we've had this conversation before about club versus country as well, Joe. So
exactly, and you see again, right? It's a great point because here you have it. Would it have been a great opportunity for Fraser? Check. Absolutely. Check that box off. It would have. Would Fraser have been an impactful player? I'll speak for Stanford. I mean, I'm unbiased. Absolutely. I mean, the odds of him doing that. And Fraser, as far as respected in the group, Fraser has the most respect in the group of that U20 group because they know his ability, and that's just the character he is. You know, I'll use this time to say it. The it factor is what he has and what he would bring out of a player like Michael Petrasso. Brilliant. We don't know. And so, again, that whole thing is we really could have taken a huge stride forward in the senior men's team, in my opinion, because these guys will be that driving force. When my leading question was 2022. These guys have to be in the conversation because they have that. I mean, for those of you, check these guys out for our listeners. You know, all of them. I mean, these young players are trying to do their thing, but guys like Dylan Guerrero, Michael Petrasso, Fraser Aird, they are playing important games.
Has Fraser played a senior game?
No, he hasn't. He hasn't. In fact, I spoke to him this morning, and he asked me when the next Canada camp was in, but he's just coming back from injury on Monday, so I don't think the camp that's, I think there's one coming up in a few weeks.
Very close, yes.
Yeah. I doubt he'll get called into it because he's just come back from injury, but he will for Canada, I can guarantee you that.
Well, that was my next question because I know there was a tug of war between Scotland and Canada for him.
I can unequivocally say,
okay,
he has committed to play for Canada.
Well, you heard it here first on the Football Weekly podcast, and when you hear about this kid later on in his career and how great he is, remember where you heard it first and from who you heard it first from, Sanford.
Yeah, for sure. That's great news for all of us.
It is, actually.
I believe it. I believe it. And that's awesome news.
It is.
Terrific. Now, Sanford, would he be, maybe probably not, I would imagine, but the under 23, I think the Pan Am team will be under 23 based. Am I hearing correctly or no?
Yeah, but I think you might see a few players from that under 20 creep up in there.
Okay. But so Fraser would probably be too busy with his club obligations, I would imagine.
I don't know. Right. But certainly, the under-20s this year had, I think it was 796s. I don't know if many of them will get a jump.
Right.
But certainly some of the 95s, some of the senior players, I'd bank on maybe a couple of them getting in there. But it all depends on availability. And some of the M players, I mean, they're 20, 21, 22. It depends on how their season has gone, their professional season, their fitness level. But I would think that there's a good chance that you'll see several of the under-20s in that group.
Stanford was one of the guys who introduced me to this age group when I first started coaching. They did speak highly of them, and it was an amazing opportunity to work with them as young players. And because Stanford was also Fraser's youth coach, even before I started with him, correct, Stanford? And he did say this group had something special and different, and they do. So I am rooting for them because at the core of it, they are kids and they are trying to, you know, make a difference. And they're hungry. And I think maybe this U20 experience that didn't go their way might drive them in even for bigger and better things.
Well, look at the under-20s that just happened. I think a few people might be surprised if I say this, but the best player that the coaches thought performed best each game is not attached to an MLS academy and is not attached to a pro club. He's with a university. It was the right back. They felt he performed the most consistent in all the games. A lot of people don't know about this kid. I think he's got a Romanian background. His last name is Stabin.
Right, Stanford.
Go back and watch the games if you can Google them or wherever on YouTube. But watch this player. I mean, if you look closely, this is a little fact. If you look closely and you get a closer, I think there's a couple times for the cameras. His shoes are taped up.
Yeah.
What do you mean they're taped? What do you mean they're taped up?
So he's not wearing pink shoes that are like all Ronaldo'd up.
Well, he likes the shoes were ripped, but he's put tape around them. because they're his favorite shoes.
Oh, now you're just saying that for Reggie, Stanford.
No.
You're right. Yeah, sorry, go on, Stanford.
But, you know, it's when we were kids, that's what we had to do.
Exactly, yep.
But two months out of our shoes.
I still do that.
Listen, for all you viewers out there, you know that Reggie's got a big smile on his face. Right. You know why? Because he's taking himself back to when he used to go back from high school, and about this time, though, it might have been over, and Rap City was on with Michael Williams. So that's what Reggie, yeah, you laugh. It's true.
Oh, my God.
But we love that, Stanford. That's right. I mean, and Stanford was mentioning this before. Like, that's about a hunger thing, right? Like, great.
Yeah, this. I think you'll see more of this kid. I don't think it'll be long before he's in a professional environment.
Great. That's great to hear. There's hope, right? We keep saying this hope. So hopefully, look, if we ask all of our footy fans out there, of course we'd want U20 success, but don't we really want senior men success? Of course, right? Yeah. So that was experience for these guys. So, hey, maybe I'm the eternal optimist, but these guys will get it done. And I'm telling people, I keep saying it, because I know it might sound totally biased to Stanford, but Fraser is easily the most exciting player we've seen in this country.
And there's so many ways we can go. We can always, I don't know if we want to say that we want to try to emulate what the United States has done in the past. I guess, I don't know what, Joe, 20 years?
Well, I mean, look at their success. I think there's something to be said about believing that you can win games. Well, all three of us can. We've seen it, right? We've seen a U.S. maturation where, well, here comes the U.S., always going to be fit, always going to be tough. But they seem to believe they are going to win games.
Yeah, but that's taken a long time as well to ingrain into the players. And it's taken a long time for them to get that attitude as well. Because for a long time, they weren't what they are now.
No.
And it's taken, you know, having there's a place in Florida, and Bradenton, Florida, where they have their youth camps and all that stuff. So it's taken all that to, I guess they're kind of copying South America and whatnot back in the day to build those academies and pump out these players. I guess my roundabout way of asking this question is, Stanford and Joe, are we trying to emulate what the United States has done, or are we trying to take it on our own role and do what we think is best as Canadian soccer, OSA, CSA?
Well, I'm sure there's all kinds of influences, but I personally think we need to have our own identity.
Right.
Just going to say.
We need to create our own DNA and how we approach players, not only how we play at the first team, and it's not as simple as, oh, we're going to play a 4-3-3 and we're going to be fluid. No, but there's got to be a dynamic to our game. You know, when you think about Canada, think this is the type of team they are, and we don't have that, and that's nobody's fault. You can't really put a finger on that. It's just that has to develop over time, and I do believe the number one thing we have to address is improve the level of our coaching, because our players will get better if our coaching is better.
Absolutely.
That's a great point.
I think, not to just keep the piggybacking, but Stanford and I have talked about this, just like with you, Reg, but for a lot of time, like plenty of times, you know, I can remember going to showcase tournaments in Ohio, and we're like on the bus ride and talking about this with Stanford for the first time. Our identity, who are we, right? And I think it can only start with exactly what Stanford said: coaching certification, coaching standards being higher. You know, it's the worst thing for me is when I have a player that I know that I don't want to stifle him. That's my biggest fear, is that if I can't take him further, whether it be through my knowledge or lack of knowledge or experience and so on, and then the environment, which might not have the most competitive players around them. And I think a lot of coaches, back to what we said before, they have to maybe be the, I don't know if Stanford you would agree, but they have to be their own assessor of that. I'm going to go even further with the identity thing. I talk about when we talk about, once we hopefully get to that point, our qualifying game. Why can't Canada be a tough place to play? The only time we qualified in 1986, I think, where was our clinching game?
I think it was in, it was in the East Coast, I think.
St. John's,
I think.
Yeah, I think it was.
King Henry Stadium. I mean, like, we go to Mexico, we go to Costa, Honduras. Those are conditions, tough conditions. Why not have those Central American teams play us there?
Yep.
You know, so again, identity, I think that's the biggest thing. I think it's a great point again. How can we establish who we are?
With the identity, we also have to, I mean, I think our national women's coach has already said this. From a girl's perspective, we're a big athletic team that never stops working, never gives up. But nobody ever says, Canada's got technically gifted players, with the exception of Christine Sinclair and you know, maybe this new girl coming through, Jessie Fleming. But
Fleming, yeah.
The first thing off your tongue for the women's soccer in Canada is not we're technically gifted, but that's what he wants us to be. And right. On top of all the other qualities we naturally have as Canadians.
Right.
So, you know, the same, I think, could be said for the men's team, where you can't really say there's, I mean, who's a technically gifted player on our national men's team? I mean, Dwayne DiRosario might have been the last guy that I can think of that, you know, had that 1v1 ability or had that something special. We've got a lot of really good players, but I think with our identity, we have to develop technically gifted players as well. And then when you match that up with our, you know, competitive spirit and our never say die attitude, and you know, then you start to move forward. But we have some work to do, and it starts at the coaches at the youth level.
I mean, it'd be very interesting to see where all the players that we've been talking about, where they end up for that 2022 World Cup, like Joe had brought up. I'd like to see our best players on the major stage, so people can see exactly what's going on here. It's happening in basketball, and I think it's soccer. It's been way overdue for soccer for a long, long time. So I'm glad to see that things are getting better, and it's not just Canada soccer. Who cares? Now we're actually getting involved and saying this is what needs to be done, and actually taking steps to try to do that. So good on you guys for the two coaches for trying to help the youth, the Canadian youth soccer players, you know, succeed in their goals. It's great to see. So actually, moving on to another aspect of Sanford's career, you touched on it a little bit actually, and you actually taught me something about the FIFA rankings. So I know this is probably one of the aspects that you have to know the inside and out of. I was very intrigued when I heard that you were a licensed FIFA agent, and I was very, very interested to find out what that entails. So if you won't mind, if you can tell us, what steps did you take to become a FIFA agent, and was that a logical next step in your career path?
It was kind of, I suppose, a bit serendipitous of how it came about, but I mean, I was taking my graduate degree, my master's degree in Canada here in Windsor and out in Windsor. And, you know, I was in sports management. I was trying to figure, okay, how do I, where do I go from here? And in my, between my first and second year, I did a trip back to Scotland to see some relatives. And my uncle lives right beside the National Stadium. He's right behind it. And we were walking down the street one day just to go to the stadium for a visit. And he ran and he stopped. He was stopped by a gentleman who was walking the other way who happened to be an ex-Celtic. And he was a big name back in, I guess, the 60s and 70s, and started talking. And he had mentioned, oh, this is my, you know, my nephew from Canada. And he said, whoa, geez, he goes, that's one market we haven't talked about. So he kind of opened it up to me and said, you know, you should go by and see this guy at Celtic. They're looking to have some eyes and ears in North America. So I went and visited
That's Academy,
Academy guys, and just off the cuff. And, you know, my uncle was happy that he got to go and get a free tour of Celtic Park while I was there. we just started talking, and he said, listen, here's my card. If you have any players or you know of any players, can you let me know? And, you know, 5-6 years later, I was head coach up at Markham, and we did a Celtic camp, and it just got to, you know, that started me off thinking, hey, I could help these guys out, I could help other teams out. It doesn't have to be just one team. And then I looked into it, and, you know, you had to go write an exam with the CSA, and I went and wrote the exam. It sounds pretty simple. It was 20 questions, but it's not like an SAT course where they have prep courses that get you ready. Your prep course is going on the FIFA website and learning all the rules regarding the status and transfers of players, and then also understanding European law and different particulars of what happens in soccer and how players can move and compensation issues and mechanisms in place and discipline. And so it was a good year that I studied. You know, I wrote the exam, and I think I was the first one to get 19 out of 20.
Oh, wow.
At least that's what they told me. I still remember the question I got wrong. It had to do with the movement of a player that played futsal in Brazil to a team in Colombia. and what was the level of competition the futsal team was supposed to get, and I answered it incorrectly, but I kind of figured I got it down to a 50-50 flip, and unfortunately I selected wrong, so I'm sure that went on and aced the exam after me, but that was, I was happy with that, and then you just start sort of looking at players and making connections, and it's just, it's like any profession, you've got to build it over time, and there's a lot of really good agents in Canada, and there's a lot of really good agents worldwide. You just try to do your job the best you can.
What you're saying is that there's really no prerequisite to becoming a FIFA agent. It's just knowing as many of the laws and the rules that you can, and then you can just write the exam. Or is there, like, do you have to have a certain level of coaching or anything like that?
No, there's no prerequisite in terms of coaching. My interest in coaching came out of that because I realized, being a Canadian, picking up the phone to call a professional coach in another country was going to be difficult.
Right.
But if I spoke their language and understood the game from a coaching perspective, I'd have half a chance.
Right.
So that kind of put me on to do my coaching license. I spoke to a coach last week from Vancouver, and he asked me about a player, and he said, you know, I'm looking for a number 9. And I said, well, he's a number 7, and this is quality. You know, in the first year, I would not have been able to speak to that.
Right.
Great point.
Right.
You know, we play a 4-3-3 with the point down. We're looking for this type of player that can come in wide. Oh, okay. Well, I understand what you're looking for completely. I don't have that player, but
you know, at least you can keep your eye out for that, right?
It breaks down a lot of, like, it cuts a lot of red tape, if you will. I would imagine, Stanford, right? Like,
you're fighting an uphill battle when you're, you know, a Canadian that has. I have no accent. I don't have a British accent. I don't have a German accent. So you're Canadian calling a club going, well, what do these guys know about soccer?
Exactly. Exactly.
World. So it was my way of sort of legitimizing myself, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, credibility, right? Adding that credibility.
I know there's tons of players within Ontario. Tons. But there's players outside of Ontario as well, throughout the different provinces. Now, do you travel to different provinces to watch players, or do you just go to the major, like the national championships, wherever they are in Canada, and scout players that way? Or do you have I guess links in different provinces? Come see this player, and you hop on a plane and go? Or is
it... Initially, I did do a lot of travel. My first 5 years, I traveled to Spain, Portugal, Germany, Britain many times. Was at Brazil, just to see what the level of play was in other countries so I could speak to it.
Right.
If I was calling somebody in that country. From a player selection point of view, I did travel a lot. You know, back then I had a day job that allowed me to travel across Canada, and I'd be in Vancouver at least once or twice a month, Edmonton, Calgary.
Right.
So while I was there, I'd always spend 1 or 2 days to go see a couple games. Now it's more dealing with my network in different provinces. I wouldn't travel specifically to see one player, but you know, we have the luxury of being in Toronto, where there's a lot of national camps and
right.
You get a good look at players here.
And your network of people too, Sanford, like Reggie spoke to too, is pretty good. Sanford's always ready and willing to at least hear about players, and then he can do some due diligence on them, and you know, like with sending them games and stuff like that. He's always been very good that way. I mean, and I think just to speak, working on Sanford, with Sanford in that kind of realm, Sanford, one of his things is to give young players a chance. I think that's one of the things that attracted me to actually, you know, having some players I might have known talk to Sanford, because that's part of his philosophy and his goal is to give young Canadian players an opportunity. I think Sanford, maybe you speak to that a little bit too. I mean,
yeah, I mean, when I started my business, I the whole focus was to try to help young Canadians get a kickstart in Europe. It wasn't to represent established professionals, because a lot of times you need to be in their markets to service them day to day. It really was, can I get them going in the early parts of their career, steer them in the right ship, get a good deal for them. And then, you know, when they're in their 20s, if they're in a market, they need someone a little bit more day to day. They can't be dealing with time zones and waiting on time to a couple days to get back to people. So I've always tried to really focus on every year finding one or two young players to move on. And it's, that continues to this day. I'm looking just to find young players to move on and get them started in their career.
Which is great, because a lot of times we're talking about, you know, a player who we might have or might have an opportunity. And I think it's about giving them again, that belief that it can happen. And I think if we talk about, that's why it's all very good and part and parcel of what we talked about. If we want to be developing players that are going to be professionals and helping us qualify, well, some of them need a chance. So I think what you do in this capacity is just as important. I think a lot of people should realize that, is giving them a belief, a chance. Stanford, you probably run into a lot of players that you know have the ability because you've been around and you see what the level is at. But correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of Canadian players who have ability probably don't even think that they believe that they have an opportunity that you might be able to provide for them. They don't understand that there actually is an opportunity, and maybe take it seriously. I think that it's actually a viable one.
Well, sometimes it's like anything in life. You need somebody to believe in you, right?
Right.
You need someone to step up and go, listen, I think you've got a chance here. If you can get this sorted out, if you can do this, this, and this, improve in this area, you've got, it's like anything. You just need someone to show confidence. And you know, there's times where I'll watch a player and I listen to a coach, and the first thing out of his mouth is, well, he doesn't pass the ball, or he's selfish. Okay, he's 14 and he likes to take players on. But he has to take players on. To me, that's a positive.
Right.
We can sort out the team game later, but just because the player has the mentality to take somebody on, that's a positive, you know. And if you see something like that and it's being pushed back, oh, no, pass the ball.
That's a great point, Stanford. You tell a story maybe about back to Fraser when he went to Celtic or Rangers the second time, and he was just trying to play kind of safe. And I believe the coach, if you told me this correctly, the coaches told him, hey, what are you doing? You were here to take players on. Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, you know, that when they first, the first few days they saw him in his first trial there, he did really well. And then near the end of it, he started to play a little safe because he was cautious. He didn't want to mess up. And they just pulled him aside and said, look, we want you to take players on. Be aggressive. It doesn't matter if you're losing the ball in the final third. We want to see that you're doing it. And for him, it was just getting that okay from the coach that everybody had been telling him since he was young, go ahead and do it. And he just went back to what he normally does. And then he just kicked on from there. I mean, talent would take over. But he needed a little reminder.
And here's the bad thing about being typically Canadian there, maybe, right? Like, you know, trying to be safe. I'm very happy, obviously, not even just someone who knows Fraser, but as a Canadian fan, that those coaches did say that, and Fraser did take that advice and, again, showed, you know, who he is and his personality through his play.
Well, that last comment leads me to my next question, and that is, in your view, what is the perception of North American, specifically Canadian players within Europe? When you're talking to whoever or whatever country that you're, whatever continent you're sending someone to, what is the perception of Canadian soccer players that you find is most prevalent?
Certainly the players over the last few years that have gone on and done well that have links to Canada has helped a lot of the players. But, you know, it's certainly the first thing that doesn't come, you know, to mind is that they're technically gifted. You know, usually very strong, fit, journeyman-like players that, you know, good level of discipline. But, you know, there's not a lot would say, okay, we're known for developing technically gifted players, difference makers. Although there has been quite a few that have come through, but not at the level of you know, your traditional big countries. And even the States, we're not producing nearly as enough of players as they have. But, you know, I don't think it's a barrier like it was in the old days. There's more and more Canadians that have come on the stage and done well. And I think, you know, when you get a relationship with a coach, part of my job is also to talk to them about the changes that are going on in Canada at the club level, and that the coaching is getting better and players are learning the game early. So our standard of player is getting better overall. So the perception is not necessarily negative. I don't think it's still a tough sell to get a young player in, but it's not as bad as it used to be. And certainly, you know, the fact that there's big-name players coming over to play in Toronto as
right,
well.
Right, exactly.
That's helping. Just that franchise is helping the perception of soccer in the country. I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's best. But in general, they think, okay, you know, Canadians, we'll have a look at them, and if they're special, maybe they got a chance. But they have to be special.
Because I know I've had, I know a couple of guys actually that have gone overseas, younger in younger ages, and come back, and it's just, I've always wondered what major coaches in major European leagues think about us here in Canada. If we're good soccer players, if they only think that we play hockey here, or, you know. So it's always, since you're in it, I just thought I'd ask and see what type of, what the perception is of North, of Canadian soccer players within bigger clubs and countries.
I haven't really run in recently in the last few years any old school perceptions of Canada.
Well, that's good then, yeah. Right? Doing something right. Well, Sanford, this has been wonderful. I always wanted to talk to someone who's deep into soccer within Canada, because there's always these misconceptions and misperceptions about things that are going on in Canadian soccer. So it's good to have someone that's deep in it. Tell us that's not true, or that's kind of true, and it's always good like that.
Edumacation
for sure, for sure. So I'd like to thank you for taking the time and talking to Joe and I today on the Football Weekly Podcast.
You're welcome. Pleasure to be here.
Well, I would love to have you on again. Maybe down the road we can talk about you know, the end of the season, domestic seasons in Europe, Scotland, England. I know you have some opinions on that as well.
That's when we take the gloves off, right? So
We had a Joe and I had a discussion last week about the downfall of the EPL. So
just don't bring up the Inter game.
Oh,
we
yeah.
can, because there I cheered for Celtic. So on that note, a long-suffering Milan fan, everybody knows anyway.
Well, Sanford, once again, I'd like to thank you for taking the time, and we'll definitely have you back.
Anytime.
Thanks, Sanford.
All right, thank you,
anytime.
Sanford.
Take care.
Well, Joe?
That gold right there.
I did.
You guys are, you know, that's gold. Like, that's, Sanford is our guy. We've known him for a while, and he's given us the insight. Reggie talked about it, you know. He gave us a lot of stuff that maybe a lot of our viewers, our listeners, didn't know.
Well, I definitely learned some stuff today. I always thought the FIFA ranking, who cares? But
well,
I guess it's important.
The guy who taught me that too.
Right. So, I guess it's important for guys to get jobs. So.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, listen. We're all passionate about it, and that's why hopefully you guys are listening to us. And. Yeah, Sanford's great, and of course we're going to have him back.
Oh, definitely.
How can we not have him back?
Definitely. He knows what he's talking about, and it's always nice to bounce stuff off him, because you know you're going to get the truth, and you know you're going to get a knowledgeable answer. So it's always great to talk to Sanford. I always enjoy talking to Sanford, even at the bar when we're just having a beer, you know. As usual, guys, you can get to us on the website, footballweekly.com. You can subscribe to our podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM. There's also a number of other ways you can subscribe as well. We have a forum where you can get involved. You can talk about what we just talked about on the forum. You can create posts and topics. I know the last two weeks, I've been telling you guys, Joe, can we give your Twitter out?
Yeah, we can. Yeah, for sure.
You want to go ahead?
Yeah, so it's, what is it, Reggie?
Joe Cola_4 or Joe Cola 4?
Joe Cola 4.
Okay,
Follow me up.
So my Twitter is Reginald at Reginaldinho_5, and Joe is at Joe Cola 4. So if you have any comments or anything you want to tell us, you can hit us up on Twitter. Go to the forum and lay down your thoughts and topics and posts and tell us what you think. And you know,
who do you want to see us talk about or talk to and all that stuff?
Yeah, exactly. Joe, again, thank you, sir.
Reggie, you're just still smiling because I referenced Rap City. And for all those of you guys might not know, Rap City, check that out. Go YouTube. Can you YouTube that? Can you Google that?
You probably could.
Circa 1990 to 1994 or 5, whatever. Just check it out. Michael Williams.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
It's
well,
great. We're always by talking to you guys.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you guys again, and we'll catch you next week.